You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM. Welcome back to the Batuta Advocate radio show, recording, as always, down here live in the Old City District, downtown Batuta. You're joined by myself, Clancy Overall, and of course, Errol Parker, editor-at-large. How are you, Errol?
I'm fine, mate. Look, mate, just looking forward to getting out there in the Diamantina sunshine this weekend. Looking forward to getting the boat out on Lake Batuta. You know, it's good to hear that the Victorians are getting their freedom back. Mm-hmm. They're joining us in the developed world. And, look, you know, I think we've beaten this thing.
Yeah, Melbourne's fallen. Taliban Dan has fallen. That was one we should have put in our new book instead of. Dictator Dan's tired now. Taliban Dan was pretty good. But, yeah, then again, none of that's relevant anymore because they're opening up. And I guess that'll be the end of it for lockdowns in Australia. Mm-hmm. Things are going back to normal. Nature is healing. And with that, you get to remember how good things were and how we managed to have a bit of fun throughout all of that lockdown. And today's guest is an Australian treasure, and he's going to be able to relay, you know, the year that was and life before and after this pandemic through the vehicle of sport particularly. And this is what you've kind of come into our world with. H.G. Nelson, you came into the world as a force to be reckoned with in the world of sports commentary and analysis. Mm-hmm. And things are better than ever, even in a pandemic.
Well, certainly are, and thanks very much, Batuta people. I've only been here a couple of hours, but they've welcomed me with open arms. I've got a pig shoot organised for later, and then certainly back as long as I get out into Lake Batuta before the sun sets, it'll be a dream come true. Look, can I just say right from the top, I'm super excited about being here. I know this is an old cliche that everybody who comes onto a podcast says, but believe me, you, it's true. It's true. Others, you know, I know you've had Kylie Minogue on, I know you've had people like Nicole on and so on. They say it, they don't mean it. That's just cant from them. That's just rote. That's just what they say. But with me, it's true. I'm super excited about being here. Coming to the issue, though, I thought that I had a lot of time on my hands. I wasn't alone in the pandemic times, and so I thought I'd put it to good use and try and construct a book about the pandemic. And as you point out, the analysis that went on in sport in the pandemic, sadly, it slipped away from me as I got into the first 1,000 pages. And then I realised that what I was really writing was an imagined history of Australian sport. But then I thought, I've got to lure in people, you know, pundits, critics, ABC types, with a bit of history. So I put real and imagined in there. And so that's what I've come up with. But can I point out that the pandemic was a fairy tale time for sport? We takes us back to a year or 18 months ago. There was no sport. Roy and I had a field day because we could talk about sport till we cows come home and not bothered by the scores, not bothered by the facts. And we had a really good red hot go. We worked out that Roy developed his own method of hand sanitising to involve the whole persona. And this was meant that as people came into a sporting venue, they disrobed, slipped into a bath of sanitiser underneath completely, and then came out, we hosed them off and put them back in their clothes and they could resume their normal activities at a sporting venue. But having said that, what struck me was the number of fairy tales there
absolutely.
Were.
Absolutely.
And can I point out, to start with, the fairy tale that didn't quite happen but I was rooting for it was the quiet man of rugby league before he gets the job in the Batuta area with the Dolphins, and Reynolds leaving with a grand final cup that they could break as the Penrith Panthers did.
Would have been one of the great fairy tales.
And also Benji, of course.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Benji. Yeah. Yes, sorry. Yes. But then right at that point, can I say, the Benji fairy tale looked as though it might have had another chapter in it at that point. I don't know that he declared before he stepped out.
That's Wayne. Wayne, I feel like he hadn't declared, a bit like Cameron Smith last year. I feel like they don't declare it because then it's all about them. All eyes are on them for their last match if they don't declare it. But looking at Benji, he could go around again.
I know. I'm sure somebody will pick him up.
Yeah.
I suspect, you know, this Dolphin side will be looking for somebody who can steer them around the park.
North Brisbane to West Batuta area. It's a kind of large catchment, the old Dolphins. We're casting a wide net. At the moment, it just looks like a cartoon.
It does look like a cartoon in
the competition. There's no locality assigned to it.
The difficulty was we were very hot for, obviously, the Rural and Regional Anzacs to take that slot.
And the Rural and Regional Anzacs would have been a hell of a team.
It was. it would have been. Certainly grunt and poke up front where you need it. They would have been. And when it came to spreading it wide, those boys would have been fantastic. And they had a whole thing to do with the way they dressed and looked, the way they approached that thing. You know, wouldn't come through a run through, obviously, but slouch hats and everything like that put on the side, numbers, everything, khaki, obviously.
Big giant foam digger mascot on the sideline.
Right. That's right, on a Bushmaster.
Now, as you said, a lot of fairy tales from the very start of the Rugby League 2020 season, when we had St. Peter Volandis come in like he did with the with the template that he provided the world.
Yeah, Project Apollo.
Project Apollo, you know, found himself the cleanest and most handsome man in rugby league to become the face of that in the shape of Wayne Pearce.
Yes, I'd forgotten Pearce's involvement. Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right.
He was the front and center. And it would have been a tough job. Would have been a tough job trying to find someone who was that, you know, had that kind of brand, an ex-player that could have been, you know, instill a bit of trust and faith in the people in the middle of a pandemic.
There's not many left in rugby league, is there? Can I point out that the great wheeze that Peter Volandis came up with was the idea that if one expert says no, there are a lot of other experts around the place who'll say yes. And he got unlucky with his first pick. And the expert that he spoke to, name escaped in the annals of history, obviously, said, no, you can't do this. But then he quickly realised that Freddie would say yes, and so off they went.
Yeah.
I love the whole branding, Project Apollo. I'd all forgotten all about
taking it to the moon.
Yeah, that's right. Forgotten all about that. And I had to go through the Wikipedia about moonshots and come up with Project Apollo, and then the whole imagery of the rocket blasting off and a whole new era. And it had the twang of old, but somehow in Volandis' mind, just yesterday.
Yeah. That was the start of it. And like the other codes followed. It was very weird to watch New Zealand play their own little comps with the rugby union. Like the Super Rugby got split into two, and it was very funny to watch full stadiums at rugby union matches, for one.
Yeah.
You know, between
the Blues, Auckland Blues.
Whakatane West versus Auckland Blues.
Well, that was the one I wanted to see.
But then we just kept getting fairy tale after fairy tale. A lot of them came through in the Olympics.
Mm.
Most recent fairy tale that I think won't be remembered as such was those blokes that the Demons fans who got into Perth. And got into the change rooms.
Yeah, like it's almost like the reverse Andy Dufresne. They have escaped this prison that is Victoria, Melbourne, etc. Gone to the big dance, and then have ended up back in prison again.
They got 11 months suspended. It's the biggest anti-story.
No, they are getting out of jail on the 28th of December, provided they are well behaved.
Wow, that's an interesting thing. You know, in that that one. It didn't go past to the keeper, obviously, I kept an eye.
No.
But the one that caught me was the lad who did the streak during the match. And his surname happened to be Bowl, and he's a relative to the 800-metre run, another fairy tale.
Yep.
But I thought that he did enough. He showed enough that he's ready for the Commie Games, that Bowl who streaked at the AFL.
Yeah.
And if only we can get him into a training program and maybe, you know, get some media advice, then I think that we found a very, you know, I can see one too in the 800 metres at, where are we off to?
Do you reckon
off to Birmingham.
How did he look with a baton?
How does he look with a baton? I think he can master the baton. He's got time.
Yeah. Well, there was one thing that I did find very amusing about that whole event with the streaker is that they have got this grown nude man, and then they have essentially forced a mask onto his face. So there's a man in front of God knows how many screaming toothless West Australians there with his nude body and a mask on.
Mm.
Being hauled away, being hauled away by the police.
That's right. Well, COVID protocols do force you to do funny things.
Mm. Yep.
Obviously, the streak was uppermost in his mind. He saw an opportunity to really cement his, you know, or, you know, put his case forward as one of the great runners in Australia's recent past. And let's face it, the Olympics were a fantastic gold mine for, not quite a gold mine, but you understand the metaphor, for Australian athletics. You know, he did incredibly well. And to think that there's more dry powder at home, I think must have most Commonwealth, well, let's face it, if we don't win every medal in Birmingham next year, there'll have to be a probe.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of dry powder at home, conspiracies in the rugby league that there might be a big cohort of players trying to get out of contracts to go play for these Dolphins. Might be a bit ambitious, might be a conspiracist getting a bit ambitious that these young blokes being caught with powder are doing it on purpose.
Oh, wow, that's a fantastic insight.
Look, so are we seeing that the Dolphins are emerging as what, you know...
Party Central.
...would be the Southern Hemisphere answer to the Catlin Dragons?
Mm. Wow, that's a big hat to wear.
And or the Miami Dolphins.
And I'm talking to a couple of lads who know big hats. Mm. Look, can I just say I hadn't thought of that. Where I got to with that was I loved the Valendis comment that the rugby league doesn't have a bigger problem with drugs than the rest of society. And so I can see a lot of bring a plate events coming up where, you know, obviously I'll bring the blow. Can you bring a plate?
Yeah.
And this would encourage a lot more people, I think, to be playing rugby league mm-hmm. than in the past, where the drug policy seems to have excluded people who like a sniff or a bit of blow or a yeah. toot to yeah. Get involved with the shorts and boots on caper.
They also have the hangers on. And have you ever seen a footballer out in the town? They've always got the hangers on. I think they also need to make use of them. Maybe they should be carrying it, Reese.
I believe the term is entourage, which is
entourage.
It's a French word that is, I think, derived from the Latin meaning of plate holder.
He's carrying the gear.
Yeah. Bagman.
I did find the return of. It gives you an idea. I don't mean to be sort of down on the police, and far be it from me to, cast aspersions in the area of the police, but to give you an idea of how much stuff's coming into Australia, if people are out there with a $4 plate that they bought from the $2 reject shop, they ripped off, I might add, and then taking it around, and it's all on for everybody.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't the rugby league people follow that? They think, well, Nadia Bartel's on the gear. Why can't I be on the gear?
Absolutely.
Allegedly.
Sorry.
Yep.
It was just a white substance. Just caught with a white substance.
The Bonomi clears the nostrils out.
Yeah.
How do you guys go up here in Batuta to get gear?
Well, we've got a lot of men in their 20s earning over 380K a year. So, of course, there's a big problem, that we have the opal mines and...
A lot of excavators coming in from Hong Kong weekly.
That's good.
They come in here and then they, for some reason, they cut out the counterweight out the back and they replace it with some gibber stones that they take off the back blocks of Batuta.
I tell you what, that tyre fitter... That tyre repair joint here does a roaring trade, doesn't it?
An absolute roaring trade. That's how they got, allegedly, a lot of the dope from Afghanistan down through into India was inside tyres,
Very old.
They would get,
successful.
All these orange men on the Bhagwan, they'd come down here with, a Renault, tyres full packed to the brim with dope.
Well, back in the day it was the camel humps, and then now they're obviously the same Silk Road continues through... Afghanistan down to...
Normanton.
Yeah, Normanton down the Gulf and through Qatar country into Batuta. So,
Qatar country.
Yeah, the show goes on forever.
How do you get on with Bob? Is he pro rugby league in your area?
Bob Qatar told us that in person at the Barclay Hotel in Mount Isa, we were watching Origin 2 2016.
Yep.
He told us that he thought Cooper Cronk was porn star material.
Wow, that's a big rap. He would know the porn star community.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm not sure how big it is around this area.
He comes from a time where male porn stars were attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where their biggest asset, was their visage.
They were more cabaret back then.
Yes, cabaret.
Yeah.
He's thinking of Boogie Nights.
Was less performative.
Yeah, he's not thinking,
it was more about the plot with the soundtrack. Fans, it was more,
No, it's a cultured bloke, Bob, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
Is he pro your minds? I know you got a very go-ahead mind policy here in Batuta. Yep.
Well, that's what we said. We ran the story yesterday on Batuta when, the National Party were locked in about these carbon emissions. We asked Bob for his 2 cents, and he said, the key to limiting carbon emissions is those big red river gums down there in the Gulf, but you can't camp under them because those branches have a mind of their own. And it's a funny story, actually. There was a bloke named Chinaman Charlie who left behind 2 wives and 19 jarjums after a big limb of timber landed on his swag one night. And we said, actually, Bob, that's not a very funny story at all. And he said, no, you had to be there when Foxtrap told the story in the Cloncurry Hotel just almost a couple of days after Chinaman Charlie passed. But
he was in full flight that night. Bobby was like, dude, you took him out of that swag. He looked like a jam roll-up.
Bob's great. He's a big supporter of the rugby league.
I was going to say that, I know there's the FNQ Cowboys. I'm just wondering if there could be an inland team.
Mm.
You've got plenty of space here to build a stadium. And let's face it, I've got to be honest here. Are you marginal seat here or are you pretty solid?
Well, Nats. We've got, Woodhead. We've got the last kind of haircut left in the Nats, really. Man with a pair of glasses. And
yeah,
and
you don't get too many men from Western Queensland that look like they design armchairs for IKEA, but, you know.
He does.
Yeah. We found one.
Little proud.
And he's our local member.
Now, you'll have to help me with the local. Does the seat go as far as south as Quilpie or whatever?
It goes as far west as Quilpie. It goes as far west as the Northern Territory. Okay. It goes as far east as the Darling Downs.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, Chinchilla's where the electoral office is.
Okay. Where the country is so sweet you can eat it with your bare hands.
Mm. Watermelon country. Chinchilla Watermelon Festival is a good time. Yeah, they have the watermelon tossing.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It's an enormous mess.
Yeah. I heard that Roy... It's one of the only towns in the Commonwealth of Queensland that Roy Gallagher's banned from, you know? Because he goes into... He goes to Chinchilla and he smashes all the watermelons.
Oh, that's a terrible...
He just goes from shop to shop and smashes them all.
Well, that's no good.
No.
No, I understand.
But that's all part of it. That's all part of the festival. Just lastly, on the inland rugby league in the Gulf, in Catter's house... We went and visited him. It was actually Robbie Catter's house, his son's. There is a book on the kitchen table, which implies people read it quite often, called Not Just the Foley Shield, The History of Far North Queensland Rugby League. And I said, well, we'll start with the Foley Shield. Yeah. I'm not really across that. But yeah,
Still played for?
Yeah, it's still there. It's still the competition. But to imply that there's so much more that you don't know about outside of this comp that you also don't know about in North Queensland. All the way back, it's all about the Daisy brothers. Scotty Prince's uncles were the mad footballers from the Isa back in the day up there. And then the Wapjacks. Wapjacks, Palm Island have got a hell of a team.
They would have. Yeah. They would have. That's a very studied, time on their hands.
Yeah.
With, points to prove.
Yeah, yeah. Come into the Big Smoke and just smoke Townsville.
Yeah. Mm. Now, that was interesting. Now, the number of books about regional rugby league, and I don't mean to drag us back into New South Wales, but there's a great book called Here Come the Townies, and this is about Gosford Rugby League.
Ooh.
And, and this was where the last pandemic 100 years ago, the local chemist decided the milk and turps would be... the cure that, this is one of those,
milk and turps.
Kelly type solutions. If I've got the right, who's the guy? He's Craig Kelly who's left the Liberals.
Oh, yes.
See, I only follow the
National Party. Text messages.
Right.
Milk and turps on the text line.
Yeah, that's right. It was a regular idea that he could, snake oil style, save the town's rugby league team with the milk and turps cure. I'm just wondering if we looked back, because let's face it, the last pandemic was 10 years after the league got going in Australia in 1908, obviously. Mm. And I think there's a lot of probably backyard remedies that kept the league going through there that would be worth exploring.
Project Apollo 13.
Good on you. Well done.
I wonder how they got that one to launch. I'm sure there was rule back in that era. There would have been different rules per comp. I reckon it would have been an unrefined league. It wouldn't have been
an
national.
Unrefined league, yes, yes, very very local. And I can't help you with the number of teams that played, but they obviously again families tended to be the origin of the teams.
Yeah,
Very much the lineage was passed on to the cousins and kids.
Yeah. Tumbarumba Goldspinks. Full team of Goldspinks were fielded
in
Tumbarumba.
Yeah, that's right.
Managers and coach.
That's not quite in the Gosford footprint, but I take your point.
No, well, usually that's a phrase that someone would yell in any pub in North Batuta, really. If they want to clear the corn feds out of the pub, they'd scream, "Here come the townies," because that's usually their cue to move on to the next place, because, they're going to have their RMs torn off their feet and their arse torn out of their moleskins and all the buttons torn off their Gazman shirt.
Speaking of Tumbarumba, I once got involved in, as you know, in the New South Wales, there was a crowd, not to mention Victoria, there was it's a blight that you don't have here, a craze for council amalgamations.
Oh.
And they asked me whether I could make a heartfelt plea to keep the Tumbarumba Council going. And the only thing I could come up with, really, by way of, you know, fearsome, you know, point, was that the tumour...
I love that someone reached out to you for that. That's a big job to put on you. Can you please save every bloke's job in this town?
Well, that's right. That's right. The council depot. Yeah. The great thing was I quickly realised that things in the tumoured area cost more than things in the Tumbarumba area, like swimming pools.
Yeah.
And so I went to town on that.
Yeah.
Mercifully, this struck a chord with the people of Tumbarumba, who realised they didn't want to have to pay tumoured prices for their swimming.
Okay. Mm. If they want to do a couple indies off the 10 metre.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. The difficulty was it was all to no avail.
Yeah.
Even though people liked it, you know, you guys must have the same problem here. Mm.
Well, they don't try and amalgamate our council, because then it just means someone from Roma has to drive 6 hours a day or more. So they just leave us to do our own thing. We'll amalgamate
Numbers, see, look, you can put a doctor in an aeroplane, but you can't put a road crew in there.
A stop-go man. No. Or woman.
No, it's just the economics of it don't work.
Mm. I seem to have a family connection with your part of the world through a partner of my sister who works on the council. He's not there anymore, but he worked on the council there, I think, in Roma for some time.
Mm.
So he probably didn't get as far as Batuta.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is an established kind of rat line from South Australia that comes up through. Batuta's closest capital is Adelaide, as the eagle flies.
Lots of old Germans.
Old Germans, that's right.
We were speaking Creole for a few years. We stopped during the war. So,
I love those shows on SBS that for some weird reason on Saturday and Sunday night they're always hunting Hitler. And I'm sure that they've got to just send him a note.
Oh,
they'll be there.
Well, lots of people from Heidelberg come up to Batuta at the end of the war, and I tell you what, they're either dead or in an Israeli prison right now, I tell you what.
I actually thought Frank Courtney's Power of One was set in the Barossa Valley. It was, Afrikaans kind of Nazi sympathisers. Yeah. That was...
I've got to be honest here, they all predate the arrival of Germans in South Australia, predate the rise of National Socialism.
Mm. Yeah.
But they...
Pen pals.
No, look, see, pen pals. I always
and imagine
thought,
history.
Oh, I always thought history. That the Boer War was in the Riverlands, you know, until a couple of years ago.
Wow, that is an excellent... Yeah. The Boer War escapes me.
I thought the Breaker Morant was killed by the Victorians.
No, well, it could easily be, and a good thing. The Boer War, have you got an idea of what happened there? No. I know Aussies went. No. I know Australians went. You know, it's our first...
No, no, it was
Afrikaans, wasn't it?
No, we went independently, so we went
as... We'd shoot anybody.
Queenslanders, New South Welsh people, Victorians...
It's before
South
Federation.
Australians and the new Hollandese in the West.
And we could shoot anybody.
Yeah.
Shoot anyone.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it was one of those kind of...
Even ourselves, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That was it. And then Peter Fitzsimons writes a book about it and we kind of get to compile the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the Breaker done it.
Yeah.
According to Fitzsimons.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like, I mean, it's an imagined history we'd like to remember.
Good on you. Well done.
It's
well
an imagined done. History.
He set a deadly precedent, that Breaker Morant, I'll tell you what.
File not found. We don't really want to get our houses raided, so we're going to stop talking about any trends that may have started there. Mm. Now, let's talk about the imagined history of Australian sport.
Yes.
Where do you find that Venn diagram between... so much of what we have been told about sport is an imagined history. Even in the... not the record books, you know, they are tricky. But, you know, I'm sure there was a couple of final tries... The people that scored them knew they hadn't scored them. And there's a couple of...
What a lovely idea that is.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things that, you know, just tie up a narrative quite well. I mean, we could go, speaking of South Africa, we could go back to, did someone poison the All Blacks in 1995? Because that's an imagined history, but it could also be true. I mean, maybe John Olomo had diarrhea when he was beaten by an amateur team of South African
and maybe Australia 2 was just a very elaborate way to launder a fucking shitload of money.
Now, can I ask you to stop right there, because you're going to write Fairy Tale, The Real Imagined History of Australian Sport 2.0, the way you're going.
Yeah,
look,
that's
where the origin of the thing comes from, really. Mm. I mean, the fairy tale that Wayne Bennett, Benji and, Adam Reynolds are all going to win the final hit out. It's just a really a media narrative. It has no, the idea has no substance. There's no fairy tale in the history of fairy tales that covers that issue. It's just a sort of thing like, well, what are you going to write about today? I mean, what am I telling you guys this for? This is how you make your schtick. No, we'll decide what's a fairy tale.
Mm.
The idea that Gladys Berejiklian is innocent is a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
The whole nature of what you described is what I've constructed. I haven't dealt with those things, but you've certainly given me a couple of ideas. So the ideas I've dealt with are things like the Battle of Sam Burgess's Head, which is a terrific story. And, you know, Donald McIntosh, who's a shooter from the Ballarat area, the Bacchus Marsh area in the 1900s, won and was, tied for first in the Paris Olympics at shooting pigeons.
Right.
Now, this is a lovely story. It's a story of an Australian travelling all that way. It's hard to imagine in those days people would go and see people shoot. I mean,
was it at the airport or?
Wait, no.
No, this was a. Yeah, see, already we're into the territory. People were paid money at the door as though they were going to see rugby league.
Yeah.
What came out was a couple of blokes with guns. I use the word blokes advisedly there.
To shoot pigeons.
Shoot pigeons. There was a whole thing where he could.
Real life pigeons?
Real life pigeons. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
What one's this? Was this 12?
1900.
Yeah.
1900. They did it once, but then they confined it cunningly in the cultural program. Now, what you have to do is you've got to read the book and wonder, is this true or is this me just making it up?
Yeah.
So this is, as you know, Roy and HG dabble in this area fairly much with their work.
The dark arts.
The dark arts, yeah. Sorry to rip the veils from the eyes of innocence, but nonetheless, you know, this is largely our shtick. But what happened in the pandemic was I realised that the whole pandemic was full of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That the, you know, you follow Greg Hunt's timeline.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just really as made up as anything I could make up.
Mm.
Anyway, so what happens here is that you go to these events and unravel them, and there's all this stuff which sounds as though it could be as weird as Rumpelstiltskin.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds as though it could be as weird as the Three Pigs and stuff like that. So that's what I've teased out in the imaginary side. And you, as I say, have to work out whether Sam Burgess really did have his head smashed in or cheekbone smashed in and played the rest of the game with his cheekbone smashed in. And what happened when Lottie Takiri scored a try, which, as you point out, was called back.
Yes.
Was disallowed.
Yeah.
So these things.
Yeah, okay. And was that all part of a fairy tale? You know, was that all part of, they were trying to draw parallels to Sattler? Was that what was happening?
All that. Yeah. And I've got to be honest here, there were four Burgess brothers. I mean, the Three Pigs comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, there was the mum who'd come out, Russell Crowe involved in the background. I mean, it's a tale that is a fairy tale,
really,
because in the last pandemic, this is going back to the Black Death, not the recent pandemic, the China flu.
Yeah. One before Facebook, when we could kind of roll out public orders and people would follow them. Yeah.
Okay. What happened there was they invented rhymes, as you probably know. Ring a ring a rosy.
Yep.
Pocket full of posy.
Yep.
Posy being the thing they thought would keep the plague at bay.
We
all fall down. And I always thought it was a tissue, we all fall down. But the correct line is ashes, we all fall down.
Okay.
And so these, I just picked that as an example of how the fairy tales, the limericks and the natty phrases about this have yet to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
They're being written, but they haven't been popularized.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting thing about pandemics as well. And in this day and age in Australia, a lot of people enjoy, particularly people who once upon a time would have been called the yuppies in the suburbs with the lawn and the two cars in the driveway. They want to live in town nowadays in a terrace house on the light rail. But, you know, those were
the
once
Protestants.
Yeah, they were once ghettos. You know, they were once, you know, the King's Cross or the inner city Brisbane or inner city Melbourne. They were once ghettos. And people actually originally left them because of the last pandemic. And I think they're going to do it again. I think we're going to have ghost cities. It's going to look like, 2 years in, maybe we did a 6-month lockdown. Everyone who had to work from home would have been happy to go back to work. I think
it's
2 years in, the people are like, maybe I can just do this forever. I think we're going to have these empty cities. It's going to be a bit like a Will Smith movie.
Whoa. Now,
I am legend.
Can I point out that my big take on it, even when it first started, was nothing will be like February 2020 ever again.
Yeah.
And I can sum it up in two words, house prices.
Yeah.
Once you get beyond house prices, there seems to be this knock-on effect of you're asking about people working from home. Commuting, will commuting ever go back?
Mm-hmm.
You're asking about, will people stay in the same jobs? Apparently, a pandemic produces this great upsurge of restlessness in the community, and you're describing it.
Yeah.
And so people who might be working at something, they think, oh, I've had enough of this. I'd rather go and live in Batuta and dig, grow beetroot.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing, because I know beetroot's a coming crop in your area. So this is going to take a long time to shake out.
Yeah.
And I think that people are very unthinking about this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure how mortgages are going to get paid in 2 years' time for the obvious reason, but the whole nature of society has been blasted by something that's been so totally involving the world.
And the only thing that has kept running in this whole time, even in like last year's Melbourne lockdown, which was the strictest in the world, I don't even think you're allowed to get
out
pizza delivered to your house, was horse racing. The number one that the show went on. I'm interested to see how. Not so much, obviously, a lot of people have gotten hooked on it and what have you, but I think there would be now a lot of experts, armchair critics like we've never seen before in racing and sport, absolutely.
I know, racing. I mean, racing was the great Volandis breakthrough, was to keep racing going. I mean, he could work out the protocols fairly easily. Jockeys stand there, trainers there, and we'll have one commentator up the back. I think we can do this.
The moment he started using the term biosecurity when talking about footballers, we're like, oh, he's done this before just with large animals.
One of the most deadly viruses that a human can catch has come from horses via fruit bats, you know, which is the Hendra virus.
Yeah, do you have that round here?
No, there's no fruit bats here because of all of the
trees are gone.
Old time Olympic shooters, you know.
Yeah.
They've all been shot. They were shot years ago.
We also have the electric nets. Bob Catter introduced them.
Yep.
Bob actually wanted to go up about coronavirus the same
shot
way.
Shot the sport.
Yeah, Bob was out the front main street of the Isa, and it was a pretty scary time there. Bob was like, you know, this is how we dealt with Hendra. We could do the same thing here, but luckily no Southerners made their way to the Isa in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Coming back to your issue about racing, okay, the thing that the pressures in society to keep these things going are enormous because the whole idea is, as you point out, is to invent races that appeal to younger and younger people. So the other day was the Everest. Now, the Everest is a big day out for people who can't go to the big day out because there's no more big day outs.
Yeah.
But they go to the track and get plastered and bet on a race.
Maybe a band plays somewhere that you can't see them. Yeah.
Correct. Anyway, so the big day outs come to racing. Now, what happens here is where does this go? Because we've run the race five times.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the people who came and watched when they were 30 are already 35, and the race isn't aimed at 35-year-olds. It's aimed at 30-year-olds. So do they have to keep going younger and younger and younger until they produce a race like the Big Ted for kids who are 7?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping the Volandis will be around for the Big Ted.
Yeah, well, I mean, they could take a few pointers from the rodeo world, you know, because they've managed to make it work with the potty calves and the young fellas getting out there, and they managed to keep them.
Big rodeo here in Batuta. People come in from all over the place.
Yes, we have a few.
A few. Yeah.
What the thing?
Our arts festival though is bigger.
Yeah.
Ah, the arts festival.
We have the Brophy tent set up in the middle of the arts festival. We've got the tent boxes.
Yeah.
Some people say those two things aren't really that suited for.
No, it was almost scrapped in 2019. You know, because you had all these like. A thespian would walk off stage at the Batuta Fringe and then they'd walk in to Brophy's tent and get brain damage.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it was just, those two things are just, they're not compatible.
But Brophy doesn't miss the opening of an envelope, so
he's there for Hamlet.
Yeah, he's there for Hamlet. He's there for the two up. He's there for the rodeo.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, it's regional towns. You know, this is what holds them together.
Yeah,
you know,
yes, no, I agree. Yeah, I understand that.
You need drifters pulling in town, putting up tents, and challenging locals to fight them. Sometimes bare knuckle.
I tell you what, the donkey circuit is a boon for you guys out here. I mean, we're in the city, we're blessed. We see bouts all the time. I noticed Sonny Bill Williams has got a very active, New Zealander obviously, a very active campaign coming up. And, of course, he fights people like The Stool, Paul Gallen and Noodles Hall and so on. But they're happy to have a go all the time.
There's something that with boxing, there's something there in New Zealand's. I think it must be easier to get a license in New Zealand because quite often when they're looking for a fight for a football for their first one, it always ends up just being a guy from New Zealand. And they're usually plumbers or
screen printers.
Yeah, screen printers or bouncers. Bouncers. Yeah. And they're just very unfit. I guess it's a nice idea. You come over to Sydney, come over to Brisbane, you get to go to this big event, and then they send you home with a concussion and
see you later.
A cab charge.
Yeah, you know, like there was the first bloke that Quade Cooper fought. He looked like he held the door open out the front of the ATO, you know, and he was just absolutely eviscerated.
Mm.
There's a lot of boxing in the real and imagined. We start off with Tony Abbott, who got a blue in boxing at the Oxford University and is memorable for a punch that he threw into the wall at the Sydney SRC office at Sydney Uni.
Yeah.
Obviously, you lads are across this fairy tale. The punch was considered his best punch ever.
Yeah.
And it sadly took out a hunk of Gyprock.
Yeah.
But I tease this out because he was a known sporting identity, really. Mm. His poly pedal, which I know probably came to Batuta once, was a terrific event to try and raise some funds for, obviously, people who were a lot worse off than him. And his final, I thought his final fling at the election was the, what I call, Dunnyism, where he stood on the beach at Manly and said there weren't enough toilets in the Manly-Warringah area.
No.
And he was the man who was going to bring them.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
having just been Prime Minister for a couple of years.
Yeah, who did nothing about it. So then what happened was that this gave me an idea of teasing out the sporting record of a lot of, and let's face it, they're all fairy tales. Obviously, Harold Holt gets a run, his great interest in swimming and drowning.
Deep sea.
Mm. Deep sea, and then your QAnon theory about the Chinese sub and so on.
Yeah.
And then we had a go at ScoMo, of course, because he's just sporting. I love the idea that you may not remember this, but when he got the top job, you were tied up here, probably branding cattle. You know, he decided he'd demonstrate his rugby league skills against a school like the Kirriwee Public School and, you know, sort of large person, tiny kids, and just flattened a few to demonstrate he had the skills.
And the
rugby league.
He did the Benji flick, I remember. He did.
That's right. And that rugby league was in safe hands in the lodge.
Mm.
Yeah.
Until he was asked to name the side of the Cronulla Sharks.
And yeah.
Not bad.
He started singing.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. That's right. And then, of course, he was lucky enough to sell the dump to Pacific Island nations on Fiji at the same time as the Australians were playing Fiji in a test.
Yeah.
And he ran the water.
Running the water bit. And we actually ran a story on Batuta Advocate. He was running water to everyone except the farmers at that point.
Yeah, well, I did hear when he got the top job, he, you know, down there in the Shire, they took him to meet the great man, E.T., and Scott turned around and said, "Oh, I've never met an alien before."
It was,
and they were like, No, Scott. No, Scott. He's
a rugby league player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get you. We're going to crash course because you've got number one ticket now. So Brendan Cowell lost the number one ticket holder position to.
How do you feel about that?
He bought a gun. No, I'm
he was filthy. He was filthy. He went and wrote a book.
And then, so there's a whole heap of fairy tales attached to him. You know, you often see him lurch out of that lodge in the sort of rather gloomy side entrance. I don't know if that's official. The only thing I can think of, this is a fairy tale. He lurches out with an announcement, which he made before last week. Everybody thinks, oh, something new from Scott. Yeah. And then he ducks back into the shadows.
Yeah.
What the fuck's he doing in there?
Yeah, I know. It's
you know, is he really catching fish?
I don't think he played team sport. I don't think he did.
No.
I know for a fact, having read an essay on him recently, is that his father wouldn't allow him to join the surf club for fear of the temptation of flesh. So that is a...
I've known that. For God's sake, stop. I need this information.
I would have been
fantastic.
Yeah.
Because he's a Bronte. I've described him as, Shire, obviously, out of the Bronte hub.
Yeah.
And I think his dad was in police.
Yeah, yep. and police and council at the same
council,
time.
Council, yeah, that's right.
Cop and council.
The great double.
So I think...
no team sport.
Yeah, I think he might have got a helicopter from Bronte to Cronulla because I don't think you'd imagine him driving through Maroubra. I don't think he'd enjoy that.
No.
The Shire is a special place. I mean, if you guys ever relocate, I mean, I'd love to see Batuta comes to the Shire for a week. I know you're rusted on up here, but I find it really difficult to understand the Shire.
Yeah.
They obviously see in the northern directions a big Tom Ugly's Bridge as something you don't cross.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you have to cross it to get to Batuta.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a line where you stop talking about overcrowded beaches and air conditioning and cars and, you know,
ska music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of bubble. That's one thing you notice about Sydney, and that's probably why they're been able to maintain so many clubs in the rugby league, is they're so enclavey and they don't leave their bubbles. Whereas I guess just the Broncos has kind of worked for Brisbane. It's just like everyone just goes into the city and watches the team play. So,
well, you know, that they are heavily supported by the Brisbane Broncos newsletter, which is the...
Oh, that a great read.
Great read.
But remember in the early days, you guys being in Batuta would know all about this. They had everything ranging from let's go cheese rings to pizza to car batteries to the general merchandise of jumpers and scarves and beanies and so on. I mean, they were very big on branding themselves.
Well, it was the beer. There's a brewery without a beer sponsored the club without a team. That was Powers. I don't think they'd even poured one beer by that stage, but they came out the gates pretty strong on bloody Wayne Bennett and Wally Lewis's chests. So
yeah, I'd forgotten about Powers.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they still exist?
They limp on in a brewery down there in Yatala, near the pie shop.
Mm.
Right. Would you think if you got a slab, you could put it down and it would be valuable in a few years' time?
Yeah, I think they might have even been the first Golds.
Whoa!
Yeah, I think they were early on the mid-strength thing, and then Powers Bitter, of course. But you do see they sell them in rather large air-conditioned pub bottle shops in towns like Miles.
Pub that has a playground.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm talking about like one for children, not a pokies room. Yeah,
We can smoke.
The Smokies. The Smokies. The outdoor pokies as well. That's another.
Yep.
That's another classic.
So
carnival-like atmosphere in those.
Mm.
We're all of these things are grist to a fairy tale because it doesn't take long. Fairy tales cover such a wide area. Mm. Sometimes they're cautionary tales. Sometimes they tell you what not to do. Sometimes they turn out great. People, you know, like the frog who's kissed by a princess and becomes, you know, Sleeping Beauty, whatever they are. And they cover so many aspects of, well, sport, really, or the story of sport.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's just as well I put some real stuff in there.
Yeah, yeah, no. And I look forward to reading this, HG, because as we know, you and your partner weave between the two seamlessly and have done, you know, since you first popped up on our radar back in the...
1986, same year as Chernobyl, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh, and 86, the fabulous grand final, trialist grand final. I know it's because it's in the book.
Fabulous.
This is true. And between Parramatta and Canterbury.
Mm-hmm.
The Parramatta side had, you know, great players like Sturlow and Ray Price and the Crow. And that was the last time Rabs got fired a few times, Ray Rabbit's Warren, fairy tale. He got fired a few times and he signed off that day with the immortal line, and so it's farewell from the Crow, Pricey and the Rabbit. And that was when the league was on 10.
Yeah.
And then it moved to obviously to 9, where it's been another fairy tale. And one aspect of that, which is in the book, and you can believe this or not, was that the league, in its wisdom, decided to get a troop from neighbours to come and sing the national anthem. There was no pre-match entertainment as we understand it today, and that's a whole section on that in both rugby league and
the
AFL.
They didn't have Timmy Trumpet.
Well done. Well done. So what happens was they got neighbours to come along, but they didn't ask whether neighbours could sing.
Yeah.
Neighbours troop could
sing. Haven't always associated neighbours with singing.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they had Guy Pearce and Kylie Minogue and people like that. Maybe Harold Mitchell was there in the background. Anyway, they come along and they can't sing a note. And even the rugby league players, who are most reluctant to comment about art, were just shaking their heads. The national anthem.
And then they went on to score no tries.
No tries, yeah. Uninspired. But that was a year, 86. I've got to say is that because it overwhelms the matches often, because this is in the AFL in particular, because the matches are so lopsided.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought that the fairy tale of the rugby league finals this year was fantastic. A lot of close games and excellent games to watch because you could not work out what would happen.
Yeah.
Unlike the season where the scores were very lopsided. Anyway, the AFL games are often very lopsided, and so you feel as though if anybody's going to watch this in Vladivostok, they'd like to see Barry Crocker perform before it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the theory.
The Brisbane Olympics. We'll just finish with that one.
Yeah, good.
Because we're talking entertainment, and you know that Powderfinger are going to be roaring back in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
Or Shepherd.
Shepherd.
Oh, Shepherd,
the most available band in Queensland.
Incredible.
I pity they didn't record Well, they only recorded one song.
No, we'll see. I think their father was only available for one recording session, and he played the most valuable instrument in the band, the checkbook.
Done. Now, if you were going to have an arts festival, how long before you'd be able to book Shepherd at an appropriate price to the community here in Batuta? Would it be another 10 years?
It depends if we had any government officials coming along, because it all goes hand in hand there. I'm trying to think of who the Veronicas are going to start.
The Veronicas,
Brisbane Olympics opening ceremony, of course.
And the band that named themselves after a bridge, the Go-Betweens.
The Go-Betweens.
Oh, Go-Betweens.
Yep.
Some of them are all sadly no longer with us.
Yeah. Well, it might be like the one-man
show.
Well,
that hasn't stopped, you know, the likes of AC/DC.
Or Rolling Stones.
Or who was
Floyd?
J.D. Stone, frontman of INXS. They got him from a reality show.
I'm looking forward to this enormously, because it's going to be, as I understand it, a budget Olympics.
Yeah.
And a budget Olympics might mean that, you know, you had to make do with... Can you remember in the AFL, recent coverage of the AFL Grand Final, that Mike Brady was singing with his guitar, wandering around the streets of Melbourne, badly out of sync. And I thought, that's the model for the Brisbane Olympics.
Yeah.
The world would love to see Mike Brady.
Yeah.
And they could probably use that footage
if
they approach the Channel 7 in the right way.
And it's just given everyone permission to tear down Woolloongabba and start again. Like, I mean, they'll keep the Gabba, but all of these clunky five ways that exist around this stadium are just going to be bulldozed.
Well, I reckon they'll probably start replacing a lot of the busways with trams, heavy rail.
Yep. You know?
Or they might just do away with the buses and put everyone on those death trap lime scooters that they have, you know, cast all over the city.
It will be. I mean, this is the parallel you draw. Brisbane, the parallel to Brisbane in the States is Atlanta, you know?
Yes.
The urban centre of the more rural south in America. And you flip that around. In Australia, you've got this high foliage city in the middle of, you know, a lot of conservative, sensible people. And I wonder if the Brisbane Olympics will be similar to the Atlanta Olympics in that people are letting off bombs and no one knows who and why.
And then we
blame the security guards.
That's right. That is seriously weird, that whole story, isn't it? I worry about this. I worry because there's going to be a joint committee, I understand, a steering committee made up of people from the federal side of politics and the state. This is madness.
Mm.
This is not going to get anywhere. Imagine, look at the trouble we've got at the moment.
Cabinet.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks very much, sir. Look at the trouble we've got at the moment, and we're not dealing with something real. That's the pandemic. That's just obviously bullshit.
Yeah.
But, you know, dealing with something real like the Olympic Games.
I know.
Extremely difficult.
The Olympics, the pandemic was a trial run.
Yeah, no, I get that.
For the Brisbane Olympics. And I don't know if we got 10 years is enough for them to get their shit together.
Yeah, well, you know, they were saying that this is probably going to be one of the first Olympics opened by the Australian president, because, you know, by 2032, the Queen will be as stiff as a boogie board, you know.
Yeah.
Peter Fitzsimons will have his
10 feet under the ground somewhere in Windsor. So they reckon that this will be the first one opened by a president. And I wonder who that person's going to be.
Well, I haven't come across this idea before. This is... taken me quite by...
Well, obviously,
I understand the
Queen dies, you know, there's going to be a referendum, and we don't want someone with hands like Prince Charles to be our head of state.
And I reckon it'll be...
you have seen his hands, they are, you know, they're otherworldly, you know. Like
they're very soft.
It's almost like the hand on the glass in Independence Day. It's just, you know, it's just this mass, you know, just going down this window like that. You see the state of
them.
I'll Google them now.
That's a really interesting thought, obviously, for him.
Who do you reckon the first president is? We can finish on that. Do you reckon the Pimble Pirate, he'll get his way? Peter Fitzsimons?
Well, have a look at the paws on this
top. Look at those. They can't be real, can they?
They're real. They're
blow-up hands. They're inflated hands.
Like a couple of red fucking
Cheerios.
Can I ask, I know this is technical, but how are we electing this person? Are we electing them through a general vote, or is that what people want?
We'll maintain a prime minister, similar to republics like Ireland, where they have a prime minister and a president.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Mm. I think Russia does it too.
A lot of countries have that.
Yeah.
Where it's always Putin.
So, yeah. Maybe we'll just elect a dictator. We love a dictator, particularly in Queensland. You just draw a Venn diagram between them all.
I think the way things are going in this country, we could have, you know, a Fiji-style coup here.
That's true.
A bloodless coup.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you've got the Kiwis and most of the South Pacific, you know, interfering in our business, you know, and, you know, having the UN come here with their blue helmets and they're like, you can't be doing this, Peter Cosgrove. You can't be overthrowing Parliament and torching it, you know. It's just a bad look.
It's not a good look.
Okay, we didn't get to answer the question, which was who would the person be? And are we seeing this person as a ceremonial person, or are we seeing this person, you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Flowers, it was cutting ribbons, collecting the flowers.
More of a governor.
President would be essentially the head of state, does all the ceremonial things, and then you got the prime minister that, you know, basically the treasurer, just, you know, runs the show.
Yeah. Look, I'm stuck for these things, but I always think of go-to person is somebody who has experience, somebody who's at a loose end, and I'm settling on somebody like Eddie McGuire.
Yeah, everywhere Eddie.
Yeah, that's right. Who is known to people, who can really stuff things up when he wants to, who people will take an instant dislike to, which I think is key in this area.
Key to be president,
Key to be president, hated by everybody. And certainly if there was, what would I call it, an eruption requiring a constitutional decision to be made by this person, he'd get it wrong.
Yep.
So I think there are three.
And that would be a presidency littered with Prince Philip-esque racial gaffes as well. So he might be the man for the job.
He's certainly got a record of that. And then we have the problem of Me Tooism here. And so would we like to see a woman as the first president to really
stamp out any possibility of
Of stupidity happening. And then I'm a bit stuck because, you know, show business people automatically always come to mind.
Yeah.
The trouble here is, or do we get somebody from the LGBTQI community to say something about those issues? And the...
Molly Meldrum. Here we go. Number one ticket holder for the Melbourne Storm.
Yes.
And a gentleman.
And St Kilda. Yeah, dual codist.
Dual code number one ticket holder. I think we've figured this one out.
Meldrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Meldrum
and
wins.
And he'll be able to open everything. Do yourself a favour. Yeah. Get down to the beach today. That sort of thing.
Yeah. Do yourself a favour.
And can pass too as an ethnic Queenslander.
Yes.
You know, he's got, you know, the big Stetson, the dreadful skin.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. You know, it's like a old basketball that's been on the roof of your grandma's garage for 10 years, you know. Perfect.
Well, we thought we'd get into this booth and solve some of the world's problems today, and I think we've done that.
We're going really well.
I think we've given it a really real well. Crack. Mm. Now, for everyone else, here's a problem that everyone else can solve for themselves. When you're looking for a present to get this Christmas, get your mitts on The Fairy Tale, A Real and Imagined History of Australian Sport by H.G. Nelson. He's done a masterclass in here today with us, and obviously a big inspiration for our transition into audio as the Batuta Advocate newspaper, and an inspiration for just about every goose on radio around the country. Point to you, H.G. So thank you for joining us, and thank you on behalf of Australia for all the good work you do.
Well, delighted and terrific to be in Batuta. I mean, I've admired your work, your handiwork from a very careful distance, i.e. Melbourne, for a very long time, and to be here at last and see the appalling conditions in which you operate. I mean, I just can't believe you're knocking out this quality gear from these sort of galvanised iron shed that is doubling as our forward security base should the Chinese do what we expect the Chinese to do.
Yeah, well...
Congratulations to
you. And
all.
Liberate us.
Yeah. We tried to have nice things once, and we get too detached from the common man. Yeah, we had to get rid of the aircon. Yeah. Everyone started publishing all kinds of op-eds that were just not on brand for our newspapers. So we keep it simple. We keep it out here we report with the authenticity of the red dirt that surrounds us here in the Western Queensland Channel Country, and that's our tagline. H.G. Nelson's tagline is A Real and Imagined History of Australian Sport, out now in all good bookstores. Thanks for joining us, H.G.
Delighted.